Hello and welcome back to the Politics Unboxed podcast. My name is Reese, and today, as it is a Monday, we're going to be talking about the week ahead and what will be on the horizon for the news as we start this new week on the day that was, of course, meant to be Freedom Day. And we'll be looking at some of the headlines. Sorry, the headlines they're going to go through and some of, well, what has been happening over the last couple of days that'll be bubbling their way through into the next week's headlines and media stories. So, all that's to come on today's episode of the Politics Unboxed podcast. So, yes, we're going to start with a story coming out of Manchester, where Andy Burnham is getting rather annoyed at what he's calling the Scottish Government's hypocrisy, after Nicola Sturgeon announced that all non-essential travel between Scotland and the Manchester and Salford areas will be banned starting from today. Andy Burnham has called the decision completely disproportionate, saying it was announced out of the blue. However, the Scottish Government has said it was made after careful consideration, saying that COVID rates in Manchester and Salford were, quote, particularly high at the moment, and these restrictions are intended to minimise the risk of either exacerbating the situation there or indeed allowing more virus to come back here to Scotland. Andy Burnham has accused the government there of hypocrisy. Now, this decision was announced in the Scottish Parliament on Thursday, and Andy Burnham has said that, well, different arrangements could have been made if the minister had just been in touch with us, saying he's going to write to Nicola Sturgeon asking the Scottish Government to compensate locals who have been planning to travel to Scotland and who will be losing their bookings. Now, this comes on the back of non-essential travel being banned between Scotland and Bolton and Blackburn on the 24th of May, and the lifting of travel restrictions with Bedford on Friday. And this is another example of the devolved decision-making in the United Kingdom, with Scotland using their legislative powers to take differing approaches to Downing Street and the Westminster government, pardon me, when it comes to tackling the spread of coronavirus. Now, Andy Burnham has not been one to retire away when he thinks something is disproportionately affecting Greater Manchester. He went off on one against the Westminster government last year and the decision to impose tougher restrictions on Greater Manchester, and now he's turning that anger towards Nicola Sturgeon, saying she is doing to Greater Manchester what she's criticised UK ministers for doing to Scotland, namely taking decisions without consultation or warning. And this is why he's, pardon me, calling the decision hypocritical. Now, there is some level of scientific data to back up this regional approach, and the northwest of England has one of the highest case rates, and the areas of patients in hospital in the UK, with somewhere around 400 patients in hospital as of the most recent data. The next closest is London, with somewhere just under 300 patients in hospital. So the Scottish Government is not making this decision with no backup, but it is a travel ban. People can't travel from Scotland to Manchester and Salford, and people can't go the other way. And Andy Burnham on the Andrew Marr Show has accused the SNP of riding roughshod over people, which is what they are accusing the Westminster government of doing, calling it double standards and hypocrisy. Now, the Scottish government and the Trade Minister, Ivan McKee, said the decision had to be made quickly, saying that, well, in a really bland statement, said the virus, as we know, moves very fast, decisions are made very fast, and those decisions are communicated at a four nations level. And he called Mr. Burnham's decision to write to Nicola Sturgeon absolutely fine, and I'm sure there will be a conversation about how we can keep him better informed in future. So no word there on any rolling back of this. It's not really been the Scottish Government's way to roll back on things, apart from sort of in August last year with exams and a couple of lockdown measures. Certainly we've seen more of that from the UK government as a whole. But it does tend to say hypocrisy when Nicola Sturgeon screams about the Westminster government not listening to Scottish people, and then the Scottish government acting on a four nations level but without consultation with the nation, or the region rather, in question. Greater Manchester, not quite a nation yet. Now, to move on to our next story, the Prime Minister is going to set out changes to the science and research budget to, quote, cement the UK's place as a science superpower. Now, this will be a new National Science and Technology Council, which will be chaired directly by the Prime Minister, yay, to provide strategic direction on how research is harnessed, quote, for the public good. Adding into this new council, Sir Patrick Vallance, the Chief Scientific Advisor of the government, will now lead a new Office for Science and Technology Strategy, taking up a role as the National Technology Advisor alongside his Chief Scientific Advisor role. This is off the back of the UK's vaccination programme, which, according to the government, has proven what the UK can achieve at scale and at speed, and you would have to agree with them there. The vaccination programme has been a success for the UK government's tech and science departments. Now, this is coming off the back of an increase in research spending from £15 billion a year to £22 billion a year by the end of this parliament. Actually, no, by 2025, rather. What would have been the end of this parliament if we'd still been under the Fixed Term Parliaments Act, which was going to have an election in 2020. But anyway, this is meant to use the extra money to tackle what are called societal challenges, the impact of climate change, and levelling up across the country. We're still yet to find out what levelling up really means, but we're hearing it a lot, so I hope that the rhetoric is matched by the activity. Now, this is, again, trying to build on the success of the vaccine approach and applying it to reaching net zero carbon emissions, and the Prime Minister is very eagerly announcing he will be trying to cure cancer rather than simply treat it. And Sir Patrick Vallance has had things to say about it, saying that this office will put science and technology right at the heart of policy making and strengthen working across government. Now, of course, where this extra funding, this extra £7 billion a year, comes, there is obviously greater ministerial supervision, this new committee chaired by the hand of the Prime Minister, and this has a dual effect. On one hand, we're seeing now science and technology right at the heart of government. If the Prime Minister's chairing this committee, then this reaches right to the top. But with the Prime Minister's hand on the tiller, and not necessarily just this Prime Minister, but Prime Ministers reaching into the future, this will mean there is a stronger political connection to research budgets, meaning that potentially political pet projects will be given funding rather than independently judged scientific conclusions, which is what is happening currently, where we're seeing money being diverted to projects that have the greatest scientific merit. So this is an interesting story, and one we'll have to keep an eye on. I'm going to just cross the channel to France, because there is, an exit poll out for the French presidential election, which I believe is going to happen in 2022. And this exit poll, however, is about the regional elections. For which region is it? It is. Let's just have a look. I can't quite find the region. But this is actually going to happen in all of the 13 mainland regions plus one overseas region and 96 départements with 4,100 seats. This is essentially the local elections of the French, the French government, and this is really not good at all. For both President Emmanuel Macron and his main opponent, Marine Le Pen, who will be failing to make gains expected for the first round of... Now, this exit poll, the 27th of June with a runoff election then, and the week before, the 20th of June, these are the exit polls for France's regional elections, with La République En Marche, which is Macron's party and the centre, is potentially at risk of falling about 10% short. Short of the 10% even, needed to take part in the second round of runoffs next weekend, next Saturday. Next Sunday, in fact. I'm getting all my dates wrong. And this has been called a slap in the face by Aurore Berger, who is one of Macron's MPs. A metaphorical slap in the face to add to the, literal slap in the face that he got about a week ago. Now, this is, being blamed on the government's inability to inspire faith in political institutions, and a mistrust of the electoral system, leaving voters with the feeling nothing can change and that everything has been confiscated. That coming from Aurore Berger. Now, this is also not great for, not great for the National Rally Party, for Marine Le Pen, who was expected to top the first round of polling on Sunday and win a region for the first time. Marine Le Pen is not running herself as a candidate. She's saving herself for the presidential election next year, but has been leading the campaign vigorously. But they are not expected to win. They're expected to come second with about 19% of the vote. The winners, with early polling conducted by Ipsos Mori, show that the centre-right parties seem to be the various winners in different regions, with Les Républicains, the main opposition party, ahead with 27.2% of the vote across France. The Green Party, Socialist Party and La République En Marche are sort of around the 12 to 10% mark. So in danger of missing out on the 10% that you need to go forward to the runoff elections, which happen in France's systems all up and down the country. Slightly different to the presidential elections, where they leave it to just two candidates for the runoff. In this one, it's eliminate the lowest ones and then choose who comes out of the parties who have regional support. One big thing from this is the turnout. This is going to be apparently a record low voter turnout year, a projected turnout of, get this, 34%. Just 34%. Now, I know that sounds potentially quite large for a UK local election. We've seen some as low as 25, 10% in some wards. But this is still bad for democracy. Anything with about 66% of abstentions from the electoral process is bad for democracy, because it shows people aren't engaged. They don't want to be engaged. They don't want to vote. And that needs to be addressed. So we'll have to wait and see. The results should be coming out over the next day or so, and I'll be putting updates on the Politics Unboxed Instagram and Facebook and Twitter pages. Now, let's go through some of the headlines from the UK papers. We'll start with Daily Mail, which says, new two-jab hope to free up your summer, with the vaccine rollout saying how it could affect foreign travel. This is hitting the front of many of the newspapers. You'll see this across many of these papers I'm going to talk about today, saying ministers are looking to ease the rules on self-isolation and travel quarantine for people who are fully vaccinated with two jabs. Now, this comes again as another build your hopes up and hope they don't get shattered moment. And I don't know if this will happen or not. It's certainly another thing that people are being built up for. If it doesn't happen, things are going to get messy against this government, I think. They can't continue to say, this is the day, no, this is the day, no, this is the new thing, this is the new thing. It's not going to work. You can't keep putting out hope and then sweeping the rug away. But this does sound like a positive move if it moves ahead. The Daily Mirror, the rush to save our summer, again, talking about foreign holidays, saying that holiday hopes are growing as pressure grows on the government to ease rules on foreign holidays. Also saying that many over 18s have rushed to get vaccinated, hoping that, quote, inoculations might save their summer. And yeah, it might do that, but again, it might not. So let's not get those hopes up too far. The Times leads with just 1 in 200 amberlist travellers have the virus, saying that fewer than 1 in 200 travellers from countries on the UK's amberlist are testing positive for coronavirus when they return, quoting Conservative MPs and travel experts saying the border rules are too strict, and saying that any travellers with double vaccinations should be exempt from self-isolation. Now, this could be the forerunners to ministers announcing a policy exempting fully vaccinated passengers from the rules as early as next Monday. So, what, the 28th, when the traffic light system is going to be renewed. The ILEs with 1 million join the rush for jabs in race to beat variant, saying that jab bookings have soared as the over-18s rush to get those inoculations, and I can attest it's been very hard to get vaccination appointments, but just about managed it. I've got mine booked up soon. The Metro leads with TikTok to help unlock, saying young people are being encouraged to book jabs by social media apps like TikTok and Snapchat, with the platform offering stickers saying, "I've had my COVID vaccine." YouTube is also rolling out an ad campaign in partnership with the NHS and saying that if this works, the Metro says, it could help to bring the lockdown end date forward. I'm not sure, but we'll find out. The Telegraph is leading with pensions raid to pay for the pandemic, with the government drawing up plans to reform the way pension contributions are taxed to help pay for public spending amid the pandemic. One idea is to reduce the pension's lifetime allowance. Am I the only one remembering what happened to Theresa May in 2017, especially as I look at the Daily Express headline, "Anger at Triple Lock Pension Threat," the ire directed at Rishi Sunak. With triple lock pensions and pension lifetime guarantees being part of the dementia tax policies proposed by Theresa May at the 2017 general election, which were widely seen to have cost her key support and possibly cost her premiership in the long run. But we'll have to wait and see with that one. I don't know if Rishi Sunak, the good times chancellor, has the backbone for that if he sees the potential fallout. Now, The Guardian leads with ministers tell Johnson, consult the entire cabinet, not just a number 10 clique. Now, this is really delving into the heart of government, with cabinet ministers saying, no, we need to be consulted on these things rather than just the people inside number 10. And even the chancellor is apparently being locked out of his decision makings, with him being included in that group of ministers. Collective cabinet responsibility and collective decision making are cornerstones of the British constitutional system. And, well, it's not going well. The paper also adds the Prime Minister faces a tricky few days this week with the Tory by-election defeat and continued attacks from former aide Dominic Cummings. Now, let's scroll through the rest of these papers. Nothing else really going on in these headlines, so I'm going to leave it there because we've just run over time. But thank you very much for listening. I hope you have enjoyed today's episode, and if you did, please feel free to give us a rating wherever you can on these podcasts, and any feedback is more than appreciated. If you want to get in touch, you can get in touch through the Instagram page, which is at politics.unboxed. The Facebook is politics.unboxed, and the Twitter is at politics.u. That's the letter U. You can also get in touch via email, which is politics.unboxed@outlook.com. And our website is www.politicsunboxedpodcast.wordpress.com, where you can find everything Politics Unboxed related, including the podcast and blog posts and any other announcements that I feel like making. So thank you very much for listening. I do hope to see you all around again soon for the next episode of the podcast, and until then, goodbye.